The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Sports Talk 1240, Eric Getzoff here with you. Doing the early shift this week. I'm usually on from 9 to 10, but this week I got the 8 to 9 shift. So looking forward to talking sports with you, talking New York sports with you. We do have a jam-packed show at 8:15. The former manager of the New York Mets, who is also the former manager of the Texas Rangers and the Boston Red Sox, is currently the athletic director at Sacred Heart University. Mr. Bobby Valentine will join the program, so that should be fun. Got a couple questions for him about the rule changes, in particular Buster Posey and the Chase Utley rule change in Major League Baseball. And also have a question about the ever so famous mustache scandal, in New York when he got thrown out of a game and came back to the dugout wearing a fake mustache. So trying to have some fun with him. He's a great guy, always knows how to have fun. Again, one of the reasons why I got into baseball initially, he was the manager of the Mets, obviously, from 96 to 2002. And those were some really fun New York Met teams. But the fun of it was that Bobby Valentine was such a character, and he was such a vibrant personality that it made you like the team even more. And even more so, the Mets of the, 98 to 2001, they didn't have a lot of talent. The only big-name guy they really had on that team was Mike Piazza. The pitching staff was made up of Mike Hampton, Bobby Jones, Rick Reed, and a couple throw-ins here and there. The outfield was a bunch of, honestly, no-namers that really didn't make a big name for themselves on other teams in the league. Jay Payton, Benny Agbayani, and Tsuyoshi Shinjo. However, the New York Mets won 97 games in 1999, won 94 games in 2000, and obviously made the World Series, but lost to the Yankees. However, those were overachieving teams. So again, Bobby Valentine will join the program at 8:15, which should be a lot of fun. Again, give a call into the program. You're always more than welcome to. The phone number is 631-888-8811, 631-888-8811. At 9 p.m., Gary Harding and John Panarese will host their show from 9 to 10. They are big, big New York Islanders fans. So good news for them is that the Islanders could win Game 6 tonight and win their first playoff series since 1993. But bad news for Gary and John is that they're going to be missing the end of the game hosting the show. But I'm sure they're fine with it, because whenever you get to talk sports on the radio, for any reason, you're ecstatic and you're not mad about anything. So I'm sure that they'll DVR the game or maybe have it on their phones while they're hosting from 9 to 10. But a quick update for you about, from the Islander game. End of the first, the Islanders do trail 1-0 on a Huberto goal. Again, obviously a long game. One period, two periods to go, but the Islanders are down 1-0. We got Brian Graves behind the glass, pushing all the buttons and making sure that the program sounds great on the air for all of you listeners. Of course, a big thank you to Rob Cole, our executive director, who puts the entire Sports Talk 1240 program together, and you can hear the program every Sunday night from 8 to 10 o'clock. So we'll get to Bobby Valentine and baseball talk at 8:15. But before that, I want to talk about the Knicks. And I want to talk about how a lot of New Yorkers want Phil Jackson out as general manager of the Knicks, and they don't think he's doing a good job. I got a message to you guys. A, Phil Jackson didn't come in came into the position of Knicks general manager with absolutely nothing. B, it takes time to rebuild a basketball team. I think basketball is probably the hardest sport to rebuild in because you need that superstar. And number C, who else do you want as general manager? And who else is going to be the general manager of the Knicks? It's not such a hot job in sports like you think. Not everyone is dying to come to the Garden and be the general manager of the Knicks. You want to know why? Because no one has done a good job as general manager of the Knicks in the last 15 years. No one. Donnie Walsh did a good job from 2008 to about 2011 when he shed all the salary cap to get under the salary number to get LeBron James onto the team, or, you know, Joe Johnson or Dwayne Wade, obviously, and ended up being Amari. But he ended up quitting because nobody wants to deal with James Dolan. Nobody wants this job. I'm sorry. It's not a real sought-after position. The Knicks are talking about getting that general manager, the guy from Africa who is currently the general manager of the Toronto Raptors. But let me ask you a question. Why would you want to be the general manager of the Knicks when you really don't have a lot of draft picks coming up, when you're in Toronto and you're in a great situation? Why? To save the New York Knicks from basketball disaster over the last 15 years? I hate to say it to you guys, but I don't know if anything is going to save the Knicks from basketball disaster. And I think the only thing that will save the Knicks is getting James Dolan the heck out of town. Because he's the problem with this team. It's him. Why do you think the Rangers have been so successful over the last 10 years? It's because James Dolan has not been a part of it. That's why. Glenn Sather's run the show there. It's all been him. Why do you think the Knicks have been a disaster in the league for the last 15 years, since 2001? It's because James Dolan has had a part of it. So as long as James Dolan has even a 1% say in what happens in the Knicks, they're not going anywhere. And I hate to tell you guys. Listen, I was born in 1992. I didn't really become a big Knicks fan until the Starberry years, when those shoes came out and everybody wanted them. In 2004, I remember they had a 39-43 record. Everyone was going crazy. They were the 7th seed, and they got swept by the Nets in the first round. So I didn't really get into basketball until then. So I've really never seen what the Knicks are like as a powerhouse and one of the top 5 teams in the league. My dad always tells me about it. My uncle tells me about it. I hear about it, but I don't know what it's like. But I want to see what it is. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to for as long as James Dolan is the owner. Or maybe, you know, he could be the owner, but as long as he says and is, you know, you could say it, that's fine. He said that with Phil Jackson, he's not going to have a say. But I feel like he's done some stuff, and I feel like that's one of the reasons why Phil Jackson kind of wants to get out of town, because he doesn't want to deal with James Dolan anymore. But let me tell you something, Knicks fans. Phil Jackson has won 11 championships in his career. He knows what he's doing. He knows talent. He knows the NBA. He's been around the league since 1967 when he was drafted. Yeah, he had Kobe Bryant and he had Michael Jordan. That's fine. But when you have 11 championships in the National Basketball Association, you know what you're doing. Let him stay as general manager. Do not kick him out of town yet. You'll be able to kick him out of town. And I'll tell you when. It's when he doesn't bring good free agents to the Knicks this summer. Or doesn't make good trades this summer and the early part of next year. Because then he hasn't done his job. So far, he's done an okay job. I mean, the Porzingis draft pick was genius. This kid's going to be a star. I love him. I love his mental fortitude. I love his game, how he's so versatile, how he's a 7-footer who can shoot, who can take it to the rim, who can block shots. He can be a Dirk Nowitzki. And that'd be a genius pick, because nobody believed in Porzingis besides Phil Jackson. But Phil's messed up a lot too. I mean, the Derek Fisher hiring, that was terrible. Fisher, honestly, when I looked at Fisher on the bench, he didn't coach. He did not demand the respect of his players whatsoever, and he was too soft. It was a bad hire. Listen, I'm not a big fan of Kurt Rambis at all. You see his resume in Minnesota, what he did as a coach there, terrible. Absolutely terrible. The guy, I think he had like in between 16 and 20 wins in 2 seasons in Minnesota. But he knows the triangle. I want to see who the other possible coaches that are rumored to be Knicks coaches in the future are. And if there's some guys that have the acumen and have the background and experience to be a coach that are better than Kurt Rambis but don't know the triangle, and Phil ends up hiring Rambis, I'm not okay with it. But if Kurt Rambis ends up being the best qualified coach, then keep him, because he knows the triangle. And Phil's been stubborn so far. He really thinks the triangle can work. And that gets me to my next point about being patient. It takes time. Learning a new system takes time. The triangle is not so easy. Dennis Rodman had a really funny quote about the triangle. I'm Googling it right now, and Rodman is obviously, you know, a big head case, a big personality in the league who didn't get along with a lot of players, but learned the triangle very well. And he had a very funny quote about the triangle. When he was asked about the Knicks' struggles, he said, "I learned the triangle offense in probably 15 minutes when I was in Chicago. It's not that difficult. It's a triangle." Very funny. I mean, listen, it's obviously a very, difficult offensive system to learn. But if you're a smart, intelligent player who believes in teamwork, then it shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't. It's about ball movement. It's about movement. And it's about playing as a team. And Phil's gotten rid of guys in the past who don't believe in the triangle. He got rid of Tyson Chandler. He got rid of J.R. Smith. So give Phil a little bit of time. The triangle takes time to learn. It takes time to implement. Not to mention, Phil Jackson came in with absolutely nothing as the Knicks general manager. They did that Andrea Bargnani trade, which was so stupid and didn't make any sense. So they lost their draft pick this year, and I think next year that the Raptors have the rights to trade it. Something of that sort. So they didn't have a lot to play with. Not to mention, when Phil came in as general manager of the Knicks, he didn't have a lot of talent. Really nothing at all. He traded away a head case in J.R. Smith, a guy who didn't really want to play in the system in Tyson Chandler, who was kind of fed up with Mike Woodson, and people think that he dogged it in his last year in New York, so he got rid of them. But again, Knicks fans, be patient. It's going to take time. Here's when you can judge him. You can judge Phil Jackson, I would probably say, in January of next year. Because two things are going to have to happen between then. Phil's got to land someone in free agency. Maybe it doesn't need to be a huge name. It doesn't need to be Kevin Durant. Two guys that I thought of were Mike Connolly, point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies, because Jose Calderon can't play defense. And another guy who I really like is Jared Bayless, who's on Milwaukee right now. He's an unrestricted free agent. He is a good shooter, plays team basketball, is a smart guy. I like him. I like him a lot. So get one of those two players. Maybe it doesn't need to be those two players. It can be someone else. But you got to land someone in free agency who can make a difference next year. And the second thing is trades. Make a trade. Do something. Acquire a player. Get rid of a head case in the team. I did like the Tyson Chandler and the J.R. Smith trade because he got rid of them and they didn't fit in the culture that Phil Jackson was trying to create. So it's going to be through trades and free agency because Phil didn't come in with draft picks. And not to mention, who else do you want as general manager of the Knicks? If that guy from Toronto wants to come down and be the GM of the Knicks, then, all right, I mean, he's done a good job. I get your point there. But then again, you can't keep changing guys every single year. You got to give it time. You got to be patient. I mean, I just moved to Brooklyn. I understand the get up and go culture of New York City, how New Yorkers are impatient. I grew up on Long Island. I'm an impatient person myself. But listen, it takes time. You saw with the Mets, with Sandy Alderson, he built up the team. I get it's a different sport. But Sandy didn't come in with a lot. The minor leagues were not stockpiled with young pitching talent. He made trades, draft picks. It took time. It did. And it's going to have to take time with the New York Knicks as well. 8:15 right now. Bobby Valentine should be joining us shortly. He is the athletic director at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut. Great guy, Bobby Valentine. Really got me into baseball. Great general manager, great personality. And again, he should be coming on the program very, very shortly. Number to call in, 631-888-8811. Tweet at me at Getzoff underscore 92. GETZOFF underscore 92. Sacred Heart Pioneers is where Bobby Valentine works. Again, he should be coming on shortly. And we right now we do have Bobby Valentine on the air. Bobby Valentine, Eric Getzoff, Sports Talk 1240. Thank you for taking the time out of your day.
Yeah, actually, I'm having a late dinner. I kind of forgot we were doing this. So in between bites, I guess we'll talk.
Absolutely. Hope you're enjoying your meal. So Bobby is currently the athletic director at Sacred Heart University up in Fairfield, Connecticut. Bobby, would you be able to talk about your program and how's it been so far as athletic director up there?
Our program is great. We have 32 Division I sports teams, 18 female teams, and 14 male teams. They're all graduating outstanding student athletes, and we're trying to give those 800-plus students as great an experience as possible, and I think we're accomplishing it more than not.
And would you be able to tell the audience about some exciting things currently happening, you know, projects being done, building athletic buildings being done, or in the works with the Pioneer Athletic Program?
Well, we have one major building that's in the works. That's probably 2 years out, a 60,000 square foot rec center, but we're also building a new soccer field across the street on the Notre Dame High School field. And we're turfing that, and we're playing our Division I soccer games there. We have a lot of hope that someday we'll build a hockey arena, but we're not really down that road very far right now.
Sure. Bobby Valentine on the program, ex-manager of the New York Mets, Boston Red Sox, Texas Rangers, and as I'm sure a lot of baseball diehards know, he was the manager of the, am I pronouncing this right, Bobby, Chiba Lotte Marines in Japan?
No.
Okay.
Chiba Lotte Marines, that's a good job.
He was the manager in Japan from 1995, and from 2004 to 2009. And Bobby, I'm a big baseball fan. How did you like managing in Japan compared to managing in the majors here in America?
Well, I don't know if I compare it, but it was a great experience. You know, great fans, 50,000, you know, strong at every game, and players are very, very good players. And there's eight national newspapers that cover baseball every day, so there's a lot of excitement in that little country of Japan where there's 140 million people and baseball is the number one sport.
Sure. Bobby, what do you think of baseball's recent rule changes, you know, stemming from the Buster Posey and the Chase Utley injuries? Do you think that baseball kind of went a little bit too far in these rule changes, or do you think it's good because it's protecting, you know, the player's safety?
Yeah, I think it's those are both good for the game because you're going to keep the good players in the game. The last thing you need is to have, you know, outstanding talents being injured on the field. So I think those are very inconsequential plays that are now governed by rules. And 10 years from now, we'll never know that people would slide 15 feet out of the baseline to try to break someone's leg. It's just a bad idea.
Sure. Also in the news recently, Goose Gossage, former Yankee Hall of Famer, he was recently in the news commenting on the bat flips by Jose Bautista and Yoenis Céspedes and said that, you know, they're both just a disgrace to the game. Just out of curiosity, whose side are you on in this situation? Are you okay with the bat flips? Or if you were still a manager, would you tell these guys to kind of cool down on the showboating a little bit?
No, I think we should be excited about doing special things out on the field. Our game shouldn't be perceived as a as an act that everyone can do, and the idea that to hit a baseball is the hardest thing to do in sports, and when someone does it properly and hits a ball 450 feet, he should be excited. He should do something special because it's a special feat. And to think that somebody who's standing 60 feet away with a hard object could actually have the idea that it was justified to take a ball and throw it at a person's head because maybe they did a bat flip or maybe they did celebrate a little, I think is probably the most ludicrous idea that's ever been incorporated in sports. And I'm sad to say that it's in a sport that I love so much, baseball, that some very narrow-minded people think that, you know, there's justification, you know, in trying to kill someone.
Sure. A lot of people looked up to you, Bobby, and admired how much help that you and the Mets did for the community after 9/11. How special and important was that for you, especially growing up in the tri-state area right in Stamford, Connecticut?
Well, it wasn't special for me that I did what I did. It was what I thought was necessary. You know, when our country was attacked for the first time in my lifetime, and the first time ever, actually, by some foreign bodies, you know, I wanted to enlist. I mean, I wanted to, you know, put on a uniform and go and try to even the score somehow. And I wasn't able to do that. So what I did is work and gave and did as many things as I could, as often as I could, to try to heal some of the wounds that were created by that horrific act of 9/11, 2001.
Sure. Mike Piazza getting inducted into the Hall of Fame this year, obviously an all-time great, most home runs by a catcher of all time. What was it like managing him and seeing the just the sheer dominating power that he had game in and game out?
Yeah, that's what it was. He was a special talent, and we always felt good when Mike had the bat in his hands and we had a chance of coming back or putting a game away because his swings were so powerful. Getting to the Hall of Fame is exactly where he needs to be. It's where he was destined to be, I think, since his rookie year in the major leagues. And I'm glad that this year is going to be the year that he gets inducted.
Bobby Valentine on Sports Talk 1240, currently the athletic director at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, Connecticut, since July of 2013. Bobby, why do you think so many pitchers are getting Tommy John surgery now? And I know this is such like a, you know, a hot topic, obviously, recently,
yeah.
And this question's been thrown out, but what's your opinion, and what do you attribute the monumental rise in Tommy John to?
I don't know. Probably better diagnosis, or more doctors who know what they're doing, or want to prove that they know what they're doing, and they feel they can cut it and make it better for a long time. You know, there were years that it went undetected, and there were probably a lot of guys who pitched with it and with tears and a lot of pain. So it's good that we're able to diagnose it and fix it as quickly as possible.
Is there anything you're doing as athletic director at Sacred Heart to kind of help the pitchers, maybe not lifting as much weights or, you know, playing other sports to kind of limit the chances that they get Tommy John surgery?
Well, you know, Division I athletes lift a lot of weights in all sports. They lift them properly because we have paid professionals that are strength and conditioning people. And there aren't many Division I athletes who play other sports. So, our baseball team had an operation or two, but I think my coaches and my strength and condition people do a great job of protecting our players as much as they can be protected.
Sure. What team would you rather be the manager for? Would you rather be the manager for a dominant lineup like the 1927 Murderers Row Yankee team?
Yes.
Or, yeah. Yes. Then a dominant young pitching staff?
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely.
That was a pretty good team, you know. They were the first team to ever have numbers on their back. They must have been pretty special, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, you got the 1995 Atlanta Braves. You got John Smoltz, Steve Avery, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, where every day you're going out there and, you know, you have a huge opportunity to win a game. But you're going with the dominating hitting staff, though?
Well, it's more fun to watch hitting, I think. And I think either of those teams is so dominating that it'd be crazy for me to think that I wouldn't like to manage them, that's for sure.
Sure. Bobby Valentine on Sports Talk 1240, former manager of the Mets, the Texas Rangers, and the Boston Red Sox. Bobby, I know you're in the middle of eating dinner, so just going to hit you with one more question.
One more would be great. Thank you.
Just out of curiosity, I'm a diehard Met fan. The game where you came back into the dugout with the fake mustache, where did you get the fake mustache from?
Yeah, that's a long story, but the fake mustache was nothing more than the stickers, the little peel-off stickers that guys peel off and put underneath their eyes to keep the sun from causing glare. And so I just took them off and put them upside down on one side of my lip and the other, and it became a mustache.
That answers that question. Bobby Valentine, thank you very much.
Hey, great interview, young man. You're doing a great job. I hope that you have continued success your broadcasting career. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time, and enjoy the rest of your dinner. Bobby Valentine on Sports Talk 1240, great spot. I love his answer about the bat flips, because really hitting a baseball is one of the most difficult things to do in sports. You bring a football player, you bring a basketball player, hockey player into the batter's box, they're not going to touch an 85-mile-per-hour fastball, yet alone an 85-mile-an-hour changeup. But if you put a baseball player, let's say, at wide receiver, or at point guard, they're going to be able to dribble a basketball, take a shot. Obviously, you know, you're not going to be as good as Kobe Bryant or, you know, any of the other great players. But hitting a baseball is really one of the most difficult things to do in sports. So when you hit a 450-foot home run, I kind of agree with Bobby. Celebrate it. And as a pitcher, don't take it so personally. He's not showing you up. He's just showing the fans that he just killed a home run. He's trying to celebrate it. And I agree with Bobby Valentine. Bobby, that was a great spot, so we appreciate that. Hopefully we can have him on the air soon. Did not mean to interrupt his dinner, but hopefully he is having a great dinner on this Sunday night. We're going to take a quick break here on Sports Talk 1240. When we come back, we'll take your calls, 631-888-8811, 631-888-8811.
.com with the promo code.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans, DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines. Also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240.
broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Sports Talk 1240, Eric Getzoff here with you on this Sunday night, 8 to 9 o'clock. Coming up at 9 o'clock is Gary Harding and John Panarese. Big, big Islanders fans. Game 6 is obviously tonight. Islanders have a chance to win their first series since 1993. In fact, on, what was it, Friday night, they won their first Game 5 since 1987, which is crazy in its own right. However, the Islanders have been a remarkable third period team, and they need that magic tonight as they are down 1-0, a little bit over halfway through the second period, about 8:37 remaining in the second. So we'll get to that. But right now we do have a caller on the line. We got Barry on the line. Barry, Eric Getzoff, Sports Talk 1240. What's going on?
Hey, Eric. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. That was a great interview, Bobby Valentine.
Thank you.
I thought you asked some very, very good questions.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
When you mentioned about the pitching staff, I'm kind of upset you mentioned about our current Mets.
2015 Mets?
Yeah, we have Syndergaard, Harvey DeGrom, and Max Wheeler on the way. I think they're going to...
Yeah, but here's the thing. They haven't done anything yet.
Well, look, they're not Maddox, Smoltz, Avery, and Glavin. I get that. And Avery you could take and throw out the window personally. But you have Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin, I could understand that.
Yeah.
But, I was just hoping we'd say a little Harvey, DeGrom, this thing of a diehard Mets fan. What we have right now is, to me, incredible. It's an incredible opportunity that the Mets have right now. And that's my topic, obviously. I'm going to talk about the Mets.
Yeah, but here's the big thing about the Mets, too. The pitching, obviously, everybody knows about. But the hitting has been amazing. I mean, they just went on that 7-2 road trip. They had so many home runs. Drubel Cabrera has been amazing. Michael Conforto is going to be a star in this league for the next, I think, 10 years. So while the pitching, everyone knows, the hitting has been phenomenal so far.
Well, you know who Conforto reminds me of? Take it back to the Yankees in the 80s. Who do you think he reminds me of?
Are you going to say Don Mattingly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I seen Conforto, a young rising star, that they said, would be a platoon player. But in the minor leagues, if you look at his statistics, he was very effective against lefties. But the Mets don't want to rush him, which I think is the right approach. But if you see, I think it was against Kansas City in Game 4. I think it was 2 solo homers, both against lefties.
Yes.
At least, yes, okay. So we know he can hit the long ball versus lefties. And what I like about him is he's not just a home run hitter. You can fall in love with a home run too easily, which I hope the Mets aren't doing right now. You need to be situational hitters. And Conforto got a run in today by hitting a sacrifice fly that was a foul ball. He got his bat in the ball, got it to the outfield just to make contact to get a run in.
Yeah, he's a great situational hitter. And I love his bat too. I mean, he just has so much power on that swing. And it's a long swing too. Like David Wright's got a long swing, but there's a bunch of guys who have short swings. Conforto's swing is long, but he doesn't have a problem getting around the ball at all.
Not at all. And he can spray to all fields. He's not the type of player you're gonna play a shift on, like a lot of lefties like Granderson, all these other guys. He's gonna hit the ball the other way. And that's why I remember watching Don Mattingly a lot in the 80s, and Mattingly was young. He won a batting crown in 84, maybe. He co-shared it with Winfield. This kid can flat out hit. This kid's going to be a number three hitter for this team for a long time, and he'll be hitting. I wouldn't be shocked if he's like a 320-95 type guy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me. His fielding is getting better, and boy, what a great find to see. He was right out of straight from Double A right to the majors.
Right to the majors. He's been Barry, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Absolutely. All right. So Sports Talk 1240, Eric Getzoff on the air. I'm on until 9 o'clock. And something Barry just mentioned, obviously talking about Michael Conforto. I talked about this earlier on the show about how the Mets in the 99 and 2000 didn't have a great outfield, but they went to the World Series. The Mets outfield currently is one of the top like 7 or 8 outfields in all of baseball. Michael Conforto has been phenomenal this year. Yoenis Cespedes, we all know what he's capable of. The guy he's leading the team in RBIs. I think he's got 14 already. Yep, 14, 37 total bases, hitting .288, .364 on base percentage. So we know what he's capable of. And the last guy is Curtis Granderson. Curtis Granderson's gotten off to kind of a slow start so far. He had two homers in that one game, but he had a great year last year. The Mets outfield is one of the top outfields in all of baseball. And I love the Asdrubal Cabrera signing. The guy has been great this year. Great. Leading the team in average, situational hitting has been phenomenal. And the best thing about getting Asdrubal Cabrera on the Mets is that it gives them depth, because then you move Wilmer Flores to the infield utility spot. He could play first, he could play short, second, even third base. So it kind of frees up Wilmer to play every position and gives them depth. We got another caller on the line. Steven is on the line. Steven, Sports Talk 1240, thank you for calling in.
Oh, yes, that's good. Glad to be on the show. That was a good spot with Bobby Valentine, even though he was in the middle of dinner. I was very interested to hear his take on both the rule changes and on pitchers overreacting to guys just celebrating a home run. After all the hearing all these old-timers like Chris Gossage, you know, going on the radio and carrying on about how they don't like the way the game has changed, it's great to see someone who's been involved in the game for a long time actually appreciate that it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I totally – and look, that's the thing. When you live in the past and you like – the way that things were done in the past, you're never going to be happy with change. So, listen, Goose Gossage isn't happy with it because that's how it was. But the game has changed. And, who's the happiest about all these bat flips and celebration is Major League Baseball, because it helps them market the players so much with all the YouTube clips and the Twitter clips. So it's good for the game. And the best thing is, too, it gets all these kids involved, because all these kids want to kind of replicate the bat flips, and it gets them playing more baseball and into the game more.
Right, and the game has to be fun. It has to be fun to watch. And
yeah,
it's entertainment most of all. And if it's not entertaining, then people are going to stop watching it. And with the millennial generation, baseball has been losing out.
Yeah.
So, obviously. Actually, most of that, though, I did call to talk about the Knicks and Phil Jackson.
All right, what's on your mind in regards to that?
And I got mixed reactions, sort of, to your take on Phil.
Okay.
Number one, does have to have at least one more off season to see what he can accomplish. To throw him out at this point would be a mistake. So we do have to give him that. But if his idea is to put Kurt Rambis in, because Kurt Rambis is more comfortable with the triangle, then that really troubles me, because at some point you have to wonder whether Phil is more concerned about the Knicks winning more games and advancing in the playoffs, or is he more concerned about proving to the world what a genius he is and how the triangle is such a brilliant offense that it can work no matter who plays it?
So what would you rather? Would you rather a good coach who is not a fan of who doesn't run the triangle offense?
I want the best coach you can find. The best coaches, the best general managers in every sport are the ones who don't try to stick around peg in a square hole. And there are coaches in the NFL who have to run their offense, and they usually end up failing eventually. And then there are coaches who completely adapt whatever it is they do to the talent they have around them and, you know, and what's available. And the best general managers do the same thing. I mean, the style has to adapt to the talents of the players. You can't take players and just try to squeeze them into an offense that doesn't play into their strengths. So, yeah, if a Tom Thibodeau, who knows how to get the most out of his players, at least for 3 or 4 years, is available, if there are other talented coaches available, then and Phil Jackson thinks that Kurt Rambis is the best choice, then I start wondering where his priorities are,
yeah,
whether it's winning or whether it's proving his genius. And Phil has a big enough ego to the point where it could easily be the latter.
Totally agree. Steven, thank you for the call. Always good to hear from you. And look, it's a big conversation too, because you look at, honestly, I think Pat Riley is the best coach of all time because he was able to adapt his coaching style to the players he had. You had the Lakers, the Showtime Fast Break Lakers, and he hated how the Bad Boy Pistons played, how they knocked everybody around. But when he came to the Knicks, he saw the players on the Knicks and adapted his coaching style to the talent that they had. And he made the Knicks much more physical, and they won. well, they didn't win a championship, but they were in contention every year. Eastern Conference Finals, went to Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So whatever, they were always in contention for the NBA championship. And then he went to Miami, and he coached. I'm not talking about the LeBron years because he was the GM, but he was a coach of Shaq and Dwayne Wade, and he changed the style there to resemble the talent that they had. So that's what makes a good coach. So I get Steven's point to a T, but I also still give a little bit more time with the triangle. It's only been, it's 2 years. It hasn't been a lot. So it's going to take time. And again, as I was saying in the NBA, it takes time to really build your team and to be a good team because you need these superstars. That's the thing with basketball. And that's the thing with Phil Jackson too, because he didn't come in with a lot of talent. He really came in with nothing at all. So, again, it definitely, takes a lot of time. The Rangers, terrible, terrible series against the Penguins. I mean, they got dominated. Their defense was terrible. The Penguins' offense was amazing. And not to mention, the Rangers need to win a playoff game at home. For how much money it costs to go to Madison Square Garden to catch even a regular season Ranger game, let alone a playoff game, how about you win one for these fans who are throwing $250, $300? They've lost 5 straight home playoff games. They lost 3-4 this year, and then they lost 7-5-2 last year in the Eastern Conference Finals to Tampa. How about you win a home playoff game? They got outscored 21-10 in the series, went 2-for-19 on the power play. Terrible. I mean, just a brutal job out of them. And what was it? I think they went like four or five straight years winning at least one series in the playoffs. And now the streak's over. And honestly, the Rangers didn't look that great down the stretch. They looked old. Henrik looked terrible in the series, by the way. You can fault the defense, you can fault Henrik, but no matter what it is, let up 21 goals in 5 games, you get pulled twice. Oh, God, that game yesterday, they got destroyed. Pittsburgh's offense was just amazing. Amazing. There was one point where Pittsburgh was out of the playoffs, and they won like 15 out of 17 games, and they're my team to come out of the East. They're too good. They're playing too good right now. I feel like every single year they have the talent, and they're always one of like the top couple teams to, in the East, but they never really make that playoff run. They won that one championship in 2009, they lost in 08, but since then they really never made a strong push. I think this is their year. They're too hot, they're playing too well. They get Washington in next series, and I think that Pittsburgh's gonna win. Let me get an update for you for the Islanders here as they're playing in Game 6 at the Barclays Center. Still 1-0 Panthers. Still 1-0 Panthers. And listen, I'm not going to call this a must-win for the Islanders, but I don't want to head back to Florida in a Game 7 at all. That Game 5 was scary. I mean, I don't know if I can go through another must-win. Obviously, Game 5 wasn't a must-win. Game 7 is a must-win. But I don't know if I want to go through that again in Florida. Win the game at home. Do your fans a favor. Win your first playoff series in front of them, in front of your home crowd for the first time in 22 years. But, we'll get back to that. We do have another call on the line, though. Corey, thanks for calling into Sports Talk 1240. What's going on?
Hey, Eric. How's it going?
Good, good. What's in your mind?
Yeah, great interview with Bobby. Definitely interesting to hear his take on a few current events and actually calling in to talk about the Giants.
Okay.
I know it's not football season yet, but with the draft coming up, I wanted to hear your thoughts on what you think of the offseason moves so far, and also where do you think they need to go in the draft, because they have a pretty high pick this year.
I honestly don't like free agency in football. I don't like guys coming in getting all this money. It just creates – I feel like it kind of creates a weird locker room culture where, you're getting paid $15 million, you're getting paid $10 million, but you're worse than the rookie who's getting paid $5 million. So I think it creates a weird culture. Not to mention, I think it was a move by Jerry Reese to kind of save his job because he knows if the Giants don't do well this year that he's out. The talent that the Giants got was good, but I was not really like the biggest fan of it. And in terms of the draft, I think they have to go defensive line. They didn't really get any pass rush on the quarterback last year. And you know, you're a Giant fan. You really know how it is with the Giants. They've always had that dominant D line.
Yep.
And you got to put pressure on the quarterback too. What do you think of them?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I like the moves. I think they desperately needed those positions, and they got, you know, they spend the money, they had the money. But, you know, usually free agent signings don't end up panning out, you know, when they're big contracts. But then I look back and you look at 2007, you know, or 2005 when they first got Eli and they went out and spent money on, I think there was one offseason they spent on Plaxico and Antonio Pierce and Kareem McKenzie. And they, you know, probably spent more than any other team in the league, and that got them a championship. And, so I think they needed major upgrades. I think that they did a good job there. So I, you know, it definitely was a situation where Reese was saving his job, but, you know, hopefully he will. And then for the draft, I think for the NFL, you have to go best available, and you can't even look at the position so much. I mean, they need running backs, they need receivers, they need offensive line help, they need linebackers, although, you know, Reese probably will never draft one of those, but I think you just go to the top guy, and that's how to move forward.
Here's the pick that really, I think, kind of killed the Giants. It was David Wilson, because that guy was going to be a star. He had that really big game against the Saints.
Yeah.
He wasn't even just like a running back. He was a kick returner, punt returner, too, who the Giants always lack. So I know you could always look back and say what if, but I feel like if David Wilson ended up being healthy, the Giants, the last 3 years, could have been a whole lot different.
Well, would you go running back if Elliott drops to where the Giants are? That's an interesting pick.
I feel like you never go running back that early in the draft.
I agree. Unless it's a girly situation where he's just an athletic freak. But I agree. I think he's got to go best available and, you know, just built. And they have a lot of holes. And I feel pretty good about them, though. I think they'll go from being probably the worst defense in the league to maybe top eight. And then that's a huge step forward. And with, you know, Beckham and Eli and another year under their belt, you know, I feel pretty good about their chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the thing about football. Anything can happen year after year. Corey, thanks for the call. Speak soon.
Need one?
All right. So, yeah. Sports Talk 1240. We do have another caller on the line. Gary, what's going on?
How are you? Everything good? A little Knicks talk.
Yeah, sure.
The point guard to turn the things around for next year will be Conley from Memphis, or is there somebody else you think?
I like Conley. I like him. He plays good defense, good ball movement. He's a veteran. If they can get their hands on him, I think it's a no-brainer. What do you think?
I think it would be okay. Certainly better than Calderon, who can't play any defense, for sure. You need someone who can play offense and defense. I think even Raymond Felton, in retrospect, Raymond Felton was good. Jeremy Lin just won a playoff game for Charlotte. So if Carmelo and J.R. Smith, like Jeremy Lin, he might have been able to win a game or two for the Knicks.
Yeah, and getting back to that Lin thing, I know it's so long ago, but I feel like the problem with Lin sticking around was Carmelo kind of wanted the spotlight, and Lin kind of hogged it from him. I would have loved to have Lin as point guard for the Knicks for the next 5 years.
Yes, I agree. Lin had a charisma, you know, certainly when Saturday. But Carmelo and Smith kind of kiboshed that, which was unfortunate because he does have heart and maybe a little high maintenance, but he can play.
Yeah.
He proved it this year in Charlotte. He can play.
Yeah, and staying on the Knicks talk, I was talking earlier in the show about having to give Phil Jackson a little bit more time. Who else are you going to get as general manager? This guy's won 11 championships. What do you think of Phil Jackson so far, and when do you think you can judge him how good of a job he's done as the Knicks GM?
I think Phil needs this year. He needs to, after this year, 3 years is enough for somebody who's supposed to be, you know, 11 championships and a Knick, not an icon, not a main guy in 69 and 73, but, you know, certainly somebody who knows what it's all about in New York. I think we'll give him this year, but after that, if it's not a playoff team, then I think we have to look at that pretty seriously. Carmelo, if you put the right guys around him, I think he can be good. If you put a good point guard around him, certainly, you know, he can work with that. But it's all about the point guard and even the two guard going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary, thank you for the time. You definitely speak soon.
One more question.
Yeah.
Carmelo's playing in the Olympics?
I'm sorry?
Carmelo in the Olympics. I heard he wants to play in the Olympics.
I'm not okay. The guy sat out the last game of the year for an injury. You got to care more about your team than playing for the Olympics.
How about Porzingis also? He wants to play for the Olympics.
I'm fine with that. Listen, as long as you're not injured, then that's fine with me. But I didn't like when Carmelo played in the All-Star game last year and then sat out the rest of the year for injury. So don't play in the Olympics because, you know, you got to care more about the team that's paying you $30 million a year than playing for your country.
I agree, but he's a veteran on the Olympics, and, you know, he's definitely playing for your country. You can't really – it's a tough chance to take, you know, don't play for your country. So he can lend veteran leadership to the Olympics, but if we put Golden State's team in the Olympics, they'd probably win it. So you probably don't need money, other guy.
Absolutely. All right, Gary, thank you for the time.
You got it.
All right. And, you know, Gary makes a good point, too. Just about Carmelo Anthony and getting back to the whole Jeremy Lin thing, where, you know, I loved Lin, but I really think that Carmelo was jealous of the spotlight that Lin got. That's, I think, one of the reasons why Lin played a little bit worse when Carmelo came back. But whatever, that was 3 years ago. And here's another thing I need to bring up with the Knicks, too. Phil Jackson may have to go to Carmelo Anthony and say, listen, dude, we may need you to waive your no-trade clause. For two reasons. One, we may not be a championship contender for the next 2 years, so I don't know if you're going to want to stay here. And two, you know, we got to rebuild this team. If we can get something for you, we might need to. Phil just may need to be honest with Carmelo and say, we got to do what's best for this team. And if that's trading you and getting draft picks and getting a little bit more talent to put around Porzingis, who maybe Phil Jackson wants to be the face of this team for the next couple of years, then Phil might have to do that. And you know what? Carmelo Anthony may have to be forced to waive his no-trade clause. And you know who the happiest person in the world would be if Carmelo waived his no-trade clause? That'd be myself, because I hate Carmelo. Not a fan whatsoever. I'm not going to compare him to James Harden, because Harden puts up more points. But Harden and Carmelo, to me, are big stat hogs who don't really understand teamwork and ball movement, and fans who really don't understand that whole concept think are great players in the NBA. Oh, you know, I was at a Knick game this year with my dad, and we were just talking about how Carmelo was chucking all these shots, how, yeah, he scores 25 points, but he takes 22 shots. There was a guy sitting right next to us saying, how can you be hating him? You know, the guy averages 24 points a game. He averages 7 rebounds. He's turned this franchise around. And I remember saying to myself, like, yeah, he averages 25 points a game, but he takes 22 shots a game doing it. It's about efficiency. He doesn't really get his teammates involved. Not a great passer. Not a good leader. I'm okay with having him on my team. I totally am. But I don't want him to be the number one player, and I don't want to pay him $30 million a year. So if he's going to clog up all the salary cap, only putting up points and grabbing rebounds, not being a team leader, not making your teammates better, and I don't want him on the team. He's not going to want to take a pay cut. I know his ego's too big. Not to mention, why would you do that? It's not like the NFL. Trade him. And the only way to trade him is really, if you're Phil, you got to sit him down and say, listen, Carmelo, here's two things. One, you're going to be on this team. Your contract's with the Knicks for the next 2-3 years. We're not going to be a championship contender till then. We know that you want to win a championship, and it's not going to be here. So, you know, you might be better suited on some other team. I think that's the way that it's going to have to be. And it's going to be a big test for Phil Jackson, too, because he's going to have to suck up his ego, because he's the one who signed Carmelo Anthony to that contract. I wasn't against it. I was for it because I thought that if you didn't sign Carmelo, what else were you going to have? Instead of winning 15 games last year, they were probably going to win 6 or 7. So Phil's going to have to suck up his ego in that regard, and it's going to be a big test to him to see if he can do that because we all know how big Phil's ego is. We've heard stories. You know, Phil is very full of himself, loves the whole triangle thing, thinks it's a genius. We've heard it. So let's see if he can suck up his ego, and it's going to be a big test for him about the Carmelo Anthony possible trade, which I think should happen and needs to happen for the Knicks. 8:55 is the time. We got John Panarese and Gary Harding coming on the program. They will most likely be talking Islanders. Gary is in his Islander jersey. They are diehard fans. Curious about their take about the environment at the Barclays Center. I actually just started getting into hockey this year. Took up the Islanders. I'm living in Brooklyn now. You know, big Howie Rose fan from the Mets, so I figured the Islanders were my team. They kind of have that same culture where they're like the lovable losers, where, you know, you love them and you want them to do so good. And, you know, they're not the Rangers or the Yankees. They haven't been around for that long, so kind of took up the team. So I'm curious to hear John's take, and I'm going to ask him after the show about what he thinks of the Barclays Center. I was at about 8 games this year, and I was at game three on Sunday night, a week from today. A week in the past from today, last Sunday. And the atmosphere at Barclays was amazing. It was great. As long as you're not sitting in those seats that are obstructed views. Because if you are, you can't see an entire goal. However, if you don't want to sit in the obstructed seats, then it's pretty simple. Just don't sit there. Spend a little bit more money. Sneak down. Do whatever you gotta do. Just don't sit there. But the one thing that I love about Barclays Center is this. The sound there is amazing. It gets so loud. When the Islanders score, when you do those yes chants, it gets so loud and so passionate. Nassau Coliseum was pretty loud too. I mean, that place got loud, but for as big of an arena as Barclays is, especially compared to Nassau Coliseum, that place can get loud, can get fiery, can get passionate. It's a fun time there. It's a fun time. Let me see if I can get you an update. Nope, still 1-0 Panthers there. Still 1-0 Panthers. Mets won today, swept the Braves. Had a very, very good road trip. 7-2 on this road trip. And the hitting's been great. Asdrubal Cabrera has been a great, great signing. And the big thing with Cabrera, too, is his situational hitting. I mean, there's been so many times where Cabrera, batting in the number two hole, has... This has happened like 3 times so far. Granderson's been on first base. Cabrera hits a single into right field, which has been able to move Granderson from first to third. That's situational hitting right there. Granderson comes home via pass ball, via wild pitch, via sack fly. So Cabrera has done a fantastic job at situational hitting. And Michael Conforto, I mean, the Mets got to be happy too because he's a likable guy, very down-to-earth, very humble. So he can almost kind of become like the next David Wright, the next face of the franchise. I don't know how happy the Mets are with Yoenis Cespedes with his lackadaisical play in the outfield, catching the ball one-handed. But listen, David Wright is obviously not the same player he once was, but I'm sure the Mets marketing department is very happy with how Mike Conforto has been. All right, thanks all for tuning in. Big thank you to Bobby Valentine. I know he was eating dinner. Did not mean to interrupt him, but hopefully he is enjoying his dinner. A big thanks to Gary, Steven, Barry, and Corey for calling in. And as always, thank you for listening. I'll actually be on in 2 weeks. What is that? That's Sunday. It's the first Sunday in May. I think it's Sunday, May 7th. I'm looking right now. Nope, Sunday, May 8th. I'll be on from 9 to 10. Hopefully we'll have a big guest there. And hopefully the Islanders are still in the playoffs. Hopefully the Mets are still doing good. And we'll be able to talk some baseball, some NBA playoffs, some NHL. And we'll be able to recap the NFL draft, which is coming on soon. So thanks a lot. We got Gary and we got John coming up for you on Sports Talk 1240.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.